Since today is a youth day, I thought I would address a subject that is applicable to both parents and teens, and for all of us, in fact. But I think it's something that I wanted to speak to the teens about, and something to keep in mind as they go through their lives and the things that they have to deal with. One of the challenges we face in the Christian life is that as we come to know the truths of the Bible, we are at times forced to make a choice. In fact, when you begin to live by the Bible and you come to understand it, you have to make choices. It's inevitable you're going to have to make choices. We come to know what is right, and we have to make a choice about what is right and what is wrong. And when we make that choice to do what is right, many times we will stand out from the world around us. From a human perspective, it's hard to do what is right when everybody else is not. You know, when you're the only one who is doing what's right and everybody else is going in a different direction, that's a challenge to us as human beings. And this is a difficulty for all Christians, but it is an especially acute challenge for young people. It's especially challenging for them. Children and teens have a difficulty with that. As Christian parents, we are personally involved in an ongoing process of maturing in the faith and seeking to apply biblical principles. We've entered into a relationship with God, and we've told God we want to live His way, and we're striving to do that. And it's an ongoing process that we're involved in. Not only do we have the challenge of living the truths of the Bible, but if we're parents, then we have the responsibility to pass along those truths to our children. That's a responsibility that God has given to us. We are to pass that along to them. And thankfully, as we seek to pass that information along and those truths along to our children, you know, God is with us as long as we seek His wisdom and help in order to pass those things along to our children. And the premise of passing things along to your children is something that is brought out in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 6. Deuteronomy, chapter 6. Moses was inspired to tell the people of Israel what their responsibility was in regard to the truths of God. And that responsibility did not end, interestingly, with the end of the Old Covenant. That continues to this day. It's a similar responsibility. So what Moses said here is still applicable to all of us. It says in Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 2, it says that you may fear the Lord your God to keep all His statutes and His commandments, which I command you, you and your son and your grandson, all the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged. So in the Old Testament context, Moses is saying you are to teach the truths of God to your children. In fact, you want to pass them along to your grandchildren. And as you teach those things and your children adopt them, it's going to bring about a prolonged life for you, for your children, your grandchildren. And when it's applied in the ultimate sense, it's talking about eternal life. It's going to allow you to have a prolonged life, prolong your days. So you want to take the truths and pass them along to your children. This is what I know. This is what I understand. And you want them to learn those things. And they bring about blessings in this life. They bring about an abundant life as you understand them and pass them along and your children begin to practice them. And they prepare the way for them to be a part of God's kingdom. In teaching our teens, there are definite challenges to be aware of. You know, as you think about your teenagers, they live in a world that has always been difficult for teens and young people. It's always been a challenge, but it is especially so today. And one of the ways that we can help them is by stopping and thinking back to when we were young. I know it's hard to believe we were young once. And we had certain experiences that we went through. And if you had difficulties and challenges in your life when you were young, it's almost certain they're going to have the similar challenges. That it's going to be difficult for them. If it was difficult for you, it's probably going to be difficult for them. And sometimes by you stopping to recollect the way things were when you were a young person, then you can take the knowledge and wisdom that you've gained in dealing with those things and pass it along to your son or your daughter or your grandson. You can pass those things along, your grandson, your granddaughter. You can pass those things along to them because they probably face similar challenges. We most likely face the pressure to fit in, to conform, to go along with the crowd. And there are times in a young person's life when that is especially intense. I remember when it was especially intense. Junior high school was absolutely the worst. Now, it may not have been for you, but it was the worst. Okay, it was better in high school. Elementary school, not so bad. But junior high school, all those kids are terrors. They are monsters. And it's difficult during that time. You can get picked on and ridiculed and all that. And who enjoys that? So anyway, that's one of the great challenges that you face in that time. And one of the challenges you face is to go along with the crowd, to fit in, to conform. And that's a common feature of the world. You know, you can see that right from the Garden of Eden. Because think about Adam and Eve. Eve was the one that Satan was talking to. But you know who was standing right there? Her husband. And she took an eight of it, and she turned and gave some to him. And instead of saying, no, don't do that, he went right along with her. The first conformist. The first person to cave to peer pressure. And it's been something that mankind has faced ever since. The book of Proverbs gives us some insight into that. Let's go to Proverbs chapter 1. Chapter 1. And it talks about what parents are supposed to do and the value of that. Proverbs chapter 1. And then it moves on to discuss what we should do when we face somebody that's enticing us or tempting us or pressuring us to go in a wrong direction. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 8. It says, my son or my daughter, hear the instruction of your father. Listen to your dad. Listen to what he's telling you, what he's pointing out to you. Don't tune him out. Listen to him. And it says, do not forsake the law of your mother. Listen to your mom and dad. There's probably nobody there. I don't believe there's anybody that cares more for you than a mom or dad. And when they tell you, don't drive too fast, son, you know what? They're probably telling you that because they've experienced that. And, you know, the tendency is for young people to blow that off. They know what they're talking about. I can handle 150 miles per hour. I know nobody else can, but I can do it. And I can make that curve at 150 miles per hour on two wheels. Yeah, sure you can. But I mean, you're young and you're invincible and you can do everything. And it is wise to listen to your parents because as they tell you, don't do that. I wouldn't do that if I were you. They're probably telling you that for a reason. Don't tune them out as just making noise that has no importance. It says, if you listen to them and heed their word, it says in verse 9, for they will be a graceful ornament on your head and chains about your neck. What it's saying is it will bring you honor. It will save you a lot of grief. It will bring blessings your way if you listen to them. And if parents are doing what it says in Deuteronomy 6, if they're passing along the truths of God to sons and daughters and granddaughters and grandsons, then they're going to be blessed. Listen to what they're telling you about how to live your life. And as you do, you will be blessed and you will be honored. It is the way to the best life possible. Let's go down to a little further on. So it's talking about instructions that's passed along from parents to children. And so the instruction's been given. However, there's a challenge that comes. You've been taught what's right, and guess what? You got all your buddies, all your friends in the society around you. What are they telling you? Come on, man. Let's do this. And that's exactly what is pointed out here in beginning in Proverbs chapter 1, verse 10. It says, my son or my daughter, If sinners entice you, do not consent. Let's do this. Let's do that. Do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait to shed blood. Let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause. You know, I've done foolish things throughout my life that I went along with my compatriots. Looking back at it, I realized you were foolish to do that. You shouldn't have listened to them, and thankfully, I wasn't caught and imprisoned. But, you know, you do things that are foolish, and we all have done them. And we can look back on them and you kind of think, man, what was I thinking? When you're more mature and you can have a more mature view of things. So let us, so they're saying, come on, we can do this hold up or this robbery. And come on, we, you know, so what if somebody gets killed? It's no big deal. And it is a big deal. And they're pointing you in a direction. Let's go to verse 14. They're enticing you to cast in your lot among us. Let us all have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path. Don't go down that path with them. And it may be enticing to go down that path with them. It may seem like it's a good idea. It may seem like, you know what, if I go down there with them, it's good. I'm going to be cool. And you know, when when you don't go with them, they're calling you a chicken. They're ridiculing you. They're making fun of you, trying to pressure you to do it. And, you know, and my experience has been, if you go down that path with them and something goes wrong, you'll be standing there with a bag in your hand and they'll be gone. You'll look around. Well, where are those guys? They're going to be nowhere to be found. And if they can throw you under the bus when you're caught, they will happily do so. So it's foolish to go down that path. And when you see people enticing you to do things that you know are wrong, the temptation, well, I want to go with them, I'll do it with them. And you think, well, we won't get caught. But trust me, your chances of getting caught are a lot higher than you would ever believe. And you may get away with it once, and that's a bad thing, actually, because then you think, well, we can get away with it. And eventually, it all catches up with you. And so don't listen to them. Don't go down that path with them. Keep your foot from their path. You know, Mr. Radcliffe talked about the way. It's not the way. You want to follow the way, that path that God sets before you. Let's go to look in verses 18 and 19 here in chapter 1. It says, but they lie in wait for their own blood. They lurk secretly for their own lives. Basically, by following this negative path, they're doing themselves in. They're doing themselves in, and there are inevitable consequences that are eventually going to catch up with them. They're lying in wait for their own blood. I don't think, and stop and think about that. Would you deliberately do yourself in? But that's in essence what Solomon is telling us they're doing. Verse 19 says, so are the ways of everyone who is greedy for gain. It takes away the life of its owners. You know, you may get away with whatever it may be. I know that there are a couple of guys I visited in prison in Iowa, and these two young guys were, would thieve in the neighborhood, and they had cased out this particular house, and they had looked at the house, and they had seen that these people were old, and they would go to bed at a certain time. So they broke into the house, and they figured, we can get in, we can get out, and no problem. Unfortunately, they did not plan on making noise, and one of the older people came downstairs and saw them and confronted them. So one of the young men, these were brothers, hit the older man, and he fell, and he died. So both of them were in prison for life. And you know, by the time that I visited them, they had matured, but they could see we were fools. But they weren't wise enough at that point in their lives to see that they were fools. And so, in essence, they got to spend the rest of their natural lives in prison. And it's a sad state of affairs. And you get smart too late. You know, gaining wisdom while you're in prison, that's good, but it would have been better to have gained that wisdom before you ever went there. Don't ever go down that path. So as adults, we've become more adept at rejecting negative influences, pressures, and temptations. We've matured, we've dealt with it, and we kind of know, all right, they don't like it that I'm going to do this, or I'm acting this way, or I'm going to put this into practice. They may not like it, but we've matured and we're really like reached the point where I don't care if you don't like it. This is how I'm going to live, and I'm not going to compromise with that because it is the right thing to do. Now, the apostles learned this lesson early on. Let's go to Acts chapter 5. And as you look at the apostles before they received God's Spirit in Acts chapter 2, you know, prior to that, I wouldn't have counted on the 11 or the 12 being faithful because they didn't do very well, did they? But by the times that they had received God's Spirit and Christ had spent time educating them before his ascension to heaven, they had been instructed and they received God's Spirit and there was a transformation that took place and they were given power and a sound mind and they were able to go on and represent God and do what was right in God's sight. In Acts chapter 5, it talks about the approach that they developed. And as the apostles carried out the commission that Christ had given them, they were preaching, and the religious authority said, "We don't want you preaching. Didn't we tell you to knock it off?" And they continued on. And let's pick up the story here in Acts chapter 5, verse 27. It says, "And when they had brought them and set them before the council, and the high priest asked them, saying, 'Did we not strictly command you not to teach in this name? We told you not to preach in Jesus' name. And look, you have filled Jerusalem with your doctrine and intend to bring this man's blood on us.'" You're basically putting the blame on us, which really it did fall on them to a degree because of the way that they had treated Jesus Christ, and they were the ones crying out for him to be crucified. So they weren't the only ones that were guilty. We're all guilty because of our sin. But they were trying to get them to stop preaching the gospel and sharing the good news that Christ had brought of the coming kingdom of heaven, of the need to repent, of the need to change your life and turn your life over to God and begin to live his way. And they didn't want them preaching that. Well, what does Peter say? "But Peter and the other apostles answered and said," so these men had all gotten on the same page. They answered and said, "We ought to obey God rather than men." All of them said that. That was their reply to the religious authorities. They weren't trying to just be defiant to be defiant. They knew what was right. They knew what their commission was. And they had that commission on their minds and they were going to fulfill it. And nothing was going to deter them from it, even if they received persecution. It says, "The God of our fathers raised up Jesus, whom you murdered by hanging on a tree." And it goes on to talk about Jesus Christ. And they're not going to give in to this pressure. So we, like the apostles, have come to know what's right, and we have been commissioned by God to do it. And being more mature, we seek to do it. And the apostles set a wonderful example for us. But our young people, they're not as mature. They've not dealt with this as long. And it's a more of a challenge for them. Do our teens, do your young people understand this fundamental principle of Christian living? To know what's right and then to do it. No matter what the cost is. No matter if nobody else is doing it, to hold fast to that which is true. Harkening back to when you were in your teenage years, as I said, it's a good idea to recollect maybe that the pressures you felt as a young person, the pressure to go along with the crowd, and remembering what it was like for you can probably be something you can use to relate to your teens. School children feel the need to conform to be like everyone else more than adults. And the reason is because they're young and their values have not become established. They're not mature. And they're in the process of becoming mature, but they're not mature. And So it's very tempting as immature individuals possibly to go the wrong way. At the beginning of my teen years, I went to a school that had a mix of well-to-do and less well-to-do teens. And I was part of the less well-to-do teens. And this is in junior high school. In that time, there was a definite unwritten dress code among my peers. And how many of you remember back to the time when madrasas were cool? Any of you? Okay. Really old people. Okay. So me and the rest of the... we remember madrasas. They were cool. And that was a shirt which my mom thought was absolutely crazy. This shirt bleeds and gets all over everything. So why are we buying madrasas? They were cool. Sorry. And I remember that I received a hassle because you had to go in and you had to suit up for PE, and so you had to take your shirt off and you had to put on certain gear for PE class. Well, somebody decided, well, I'll check out where you bought that madras. Well, mine was from JCPenney's. Sorry, that doesn't rate. So you tell everybody else, hey, this guy's poor and a loser. Look at the clothes he's wearing. And especially difficult was the jeans people wore at the time. Now, for all of us living today, Levi's are a regular part of life. You know, they're just commonplace, as well as a whole bunch of other different jeans. But when I was in junior high school, Levi's were the item. And Levi's were expensive. So my parents couldn't afford Levi's. So guess what I got to wear? I got to wear Robux. Robux, Levi's, sorry, there was no contest there. And JCPenney jeans. Sorry. They may have been jeans, but they were a cheap facsimile. And the kids would point out, look at this loser, he's wearing this. And so they would point out the areas where you were making fashion faux pas. And it was embarrassing. And for me personally, I really didn't care to go to school because it was embarrassing. People would make fun of you for this, that, or the other thing. And there was no fun to that. And I think a great day in my life at that stage was when I got a pair of Levi's. All right, I fit in. I'm not going to be ridiculed. And I wore those babies every day I possibly could. So, you know, you want to fit in. And that's how we are as human beings. And nobody likes ridicule. We all, especially as young people, want to conform. And it's a pressure that we all feel. Now, the pressure to conform is, as I said, is intense for teens because they're still maturing. As I said, their values have not become fixed. And the fact that teens do not firmly established values makes it clear how important our responsibility is as parents. Let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 7. Back to Deuteronomy 6 once again. And it talks about the approach that we're to take as parents. And, you know, this approach, your kids hate. Your kids hate this approach. Because you know what? You've told them, and maybe they weren't listening, and you tell them again, and they're tuning you out, or saying, yeah, 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 you told me that before. And they don't want to hear it. And and as a person who dealt with child psychology and dealt with children, the point that one of the things she came to realize is things don't register with young people. And repetition is absolutely necessary whether they like it or not. Because it is by your being repeating the value that it eventually sinks in. Let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 6 here in verse 7. And this is the approach you have to take. It says, you shall teach them diligently to your children. So we're to teach diligently. It says, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. So basically it says you're to teach the true values all day long. And it doesn't just say to do it one day. You're to teach those values every day. You're to exemplify them. And you're to teach them because you want to reach your children because you want their days to be prolonged in the land. You want them to have an abundant life. You want them to be blessed. and you want to do your part diligently to pass those things along to them. As we think about our young people, we might ask ourselves, are there areas in life where they are being pressured? Where they're being pressured to go along with the crowd? Directly ask them the question, how is that area of their life going? Not only do our teens feel pressure to wear the right clothes and be popular, but they face pressure because they are a part of the church, because they have begun to attend church. We made a decision to attend church. We made a conscious decision to attend church and to begin to live that way that is in harmony with the church. We made a conscious decision. Nobody made us do it. But our children, they didn't make that conscious decision. You know why they're here? Because we drug them here. Okay? We're going to church. We're going to church. And you may be 10, 12 years old. What do you mean we're going to church? It's Saturday. Yeah, we're making a change here in the family. What? You know, and you're not going out on Friday. You're not going to be on the ball team. You're not going to be doing this. And they're all, oh, yeah, let's do this. I'm excited about this new path. They aren't. It's tough. Because especially if they're, even when they're older, it's tough. Because I know for my own children, there were times when it was very difficult for them. And we tried to say, this is how it's going to be. When you can leave and go someplace else, then you can make your own decisions. But while you're living here, this is how we're going to, what we're going to do. And that was a popular stance, but we took it anyway. So God's invitation to be part of his family complicates matters in terms of fitting in. You know, he's called us out of the world, and as he's called us out of the world, because you begin to live differently, it causes you to face challenges. And it's not easy. Christ, because he lived differently, he was persecuted. And he tells us in John chapter 15 that because he was persecuted, do you think you're not going to be? When you try to follow my example and do what I've told you to do, you will sometimes receive persecution. Not always, but you will receive persecution at some point along the way. And there's no fun to that. There's no fun to it. And the purpose of God's invitation is to make us different. And if we have accepted his invitation, we have agreed to spend the rest of our life set apart from other people in the world. We accepted that as parents. But our kids didn't make that choice yet, and it's hard for them. And we want to encourage them and help them and help them to see the importance and the value of going down that path. And we want to try to help understand where they're at and knowing that there are difficulties to it. And it is a difficult path to go down. It is a difficult path to go down. We willingly chose the path, but our children didn't. And it's hard for them to go against the grain because their friends aren't going to church on Saturday. Their friends are going to, you know, doing things that they wished that they could do. And they're different. But God called us to be different. Not just to be different for being different's sake, but being different because you're living a different way of life. And we have to sell them on that value. We're called to do the right thing. And some of the things that they have to deal with, we're called to keep the seventh day holy by applying the fourth commandment. And by making the right choice to keep the Sabbath, teams miss out on jobs. They sometimes lose friends. They can't be on a team. You know, my kids were told, well, if you can't be here for practice or the game, you're out. One coach said, if you can't make it to Saturday practice, then you can't be on the team. So basically, he put the pressure on them to be there at Saturday practice. And the startle, as I think I've told this story before, and if I have repeated it, sorry. But anyway, because he was our child, that's not happening. And the sad thing was, once he quit, there were no more Saturday practices, which I thought was one of the most reprehensible acts I've ever come across. But it's the world we live in. It's the world that we live in. So when you choose to keep the Sabbath, you automatically stand out in a non-Sabbath world. And there's great pressure to go along with the crowd. How are your kids dealing with the Sabbath? How are they dealing with the Sabbath? It's something you might ask them and see how they're dealing with it. Another thing that our young people are called upon to do is to honor and reverence God's name. We know that as a Christian, we are to keep the third commandment, to reverence God's name. So how do you deal with living in a world where, oh my God, is God and Jesus and acronyms such as OMG? They're all very commonplace. How do you deal with that? How are your young people dealing with that? As you look at the world, most of them have no clue about honoring and reverencing God's name. But we do. We do. Are we doing that? Are we teaching that value to our children? And how are they dealing with it? How are they dealing with it? The scripture tells us, let there, in Ephesians 5, verse 4, and I'm reading from the Amplified Bible, it says, let there be no filthiness, that is, obscenity, indecency, nor foolish and sinful, silly and corrupt talk, nor coarse jesting, which are not fitting or becoming, but instead voice your thankfulness to God. Don't go down that path. Use that language and in your life. And our job is to make sure that we're setting the example in our language and pass that value along to them and reinforce the right value that they will not become involved in that kind of language because it becomes habitual. It becomes habitual, I know, because as I began coming in the church, I realized that I was using language that was inappropriate for being a member of the church. And I realized I can't use this language anymore. And there was a day that I said, you know what? I have to stop this. I know I can't remember exactly the date of the year, but I know there was a conscious moment in my life when I said, I have to stop doing this. And I made a conscious effort to stop. And little by little, it got better, and eventually it stopped. So is my language perfect? Sadly, no. But I try to make it perfect and to live by it every day. I don't want to use inappropriate language. And it's something that we must do as parents, and we want to pass that value along to our kids. So how are they doing in that area? Our children are called to flee sexual immorality, as it says in 1 Corinthians 6, verse 18. We live in a world that is saturated with sexual immorality on every front, bombarded by it. It's like a flood that engulfs the world. And it may seem like everyone around us is indulging in that area of life, but is that really true? Is that really true? Even if it is true, we have to say, you know what? I'm not going down that path. You know, that's the decision that Lot had to make. He lived in an immoral place. And Lot made the decision not to go along with them and be immoral. And as a result of that, he stood out in that city. And he was vexed, as it says in the scriptures. We must choose to do what's right. We must choose to do what's right. So one of the great challenges of our society at this time is pornography. Are our kids involved with pornography? If they're going to high school, they're exposed to this. You can be assured. So how do they deal with it? Do you just say, well, let me see your phone or let me look at that? Or do they say, no, I'm not going down that path? And as parents, where are we at? Because if you're a parent and you're doing that, you don't think that they know or become aware of it. So if you're not living the value, why should they? So we have to think about our example, and we seek to try to pass that along to them, to flee sexual immorality. And you know, as you, I'm telling you as a parent, if you find somebody that you like, male or female, and you begin hanging out regularly together. I know this is a surprise, but the way that we've been created, as you spend more time together, the barriers come down. And when you're hanging out together, it's hard to flee sexual immorality. So your body's telling you, go for it. God's telling you, turn the other direction and move away from it. Don't go down that path. Don't do it until you're ready, until you're old enough to make that commitment. A final area we might consider in regard to doing what is right is in the area of alcohol and drugs. The overconsumption of alcohol and taking of drugs in various forms is becoming more and more acceptable in society. Alcohol has been acceptable for a long time. You go back to the early years of America, people did a lot of drinking. There's no TV watching, but they could drink, and they did a lot of it. And unfortunately, it's something that is pervasive. If your kids are going to go to college, guess what they're going to be bombarded with? Every imaginable drinking game, beer pong, all of the things that kids do and overconsume alcohol. And it's a dangerous thing for them. And we need to help them through it. They're going to be offered to smoke marijuana. They're going to be offered drugs. They're going to be offered a beer. I remember I was in high school, and I don't know where this guy got the beer, but he said, "You want a beer?" I was in high school, and I thought, "No, I'm not doing that." So I said no, and I walked away. And I didn't walk away. I stayed there, but I wasn't drinking. But he continued drinking it. So you're lost. I figured, okay, go for it. I'm not going to do what you're doing. And you have to stand up for what is right. It is a challenge to human beings to reject the wrong path. Who wants to stand out? Who wants to be different? Isn't it much easier to fit in and be thought cool? As we understand what is right, we come to realize that we must do what is right. To understand the right value and not do it is a waste. It's pointless. It's all it is knowledge. And knowledge without application means nothing. So if you know what's right, our challenge is to do it. Our challenge is to do it. I'm not saying it's easy, but the more you do it, the better you will get at it, the easier it will become, but you've got to do it. So when you learn the right value, then put it into practice. James, the Apostle James, spent a great deal of time talking about that, being doers of the word, not just hearers only. You know, we tell you to flee fornication. Yeah, I heard that. But are you going to do it? We tell you to use good language. Are you going to do it? Are you going to apply the principle? That's the thing we've got to do. Now, the question is, why do what is right? What is encouraging about the Bible is that it's full of examples of human beings, both young and old, who've stood up against pressure to conform to what they knew to be wrong. And there are two primary reasons why those examples are there. Firstly, to show us the right path. And to show us the positive outcome of doing what is right, standing up against the flow of society. One example of that is the prophet Daniel and his friends. The prophet Daniel and his friends were taken captive. They were brought back to Babylon. And somehow or other, they were selected to be a part of a program to become a part of the administration of the kingdom of Babylon. They were chosen. I'm not sure how they were chosen. I'm not sure whether they had civil service exams or whatever at that particular time, but they were chosen. And so Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, we would know them probably as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego by their Babylonian names. They were selected to serve the king and to be trained in that service. However, as they began to go through the training, they became aware of the fact that food and drink was provided for them. And they said, there's food we can't eat. Because we know the truth. Our parents have taught us what is right in this regard. And we can't eat certain things you're offering us. We can't eat it. So they recognize that. So what do we do? Well, why not just go along? Everybody else in the program is going to go along with it. And by you saying, "I'm not going to eat that stuff, what you're offering," you're going to stand out. Why not just go along with the crowd? Who's going to know? You will, and you violated your conscience. You know what, that you've done what's wrong, and you also have sinned against God. And God's going to know. And whether anybody else knows or not, God is going to know. So the young men said, you know what, we're not going to do that. And Daniel was a wise man, and he said, you know what, this violates our conscience. And he said, would it be possible for us to be served only water and vegetables? And the administrator of the program said, I don't know about that because I'm not sure you guys are going to be healthy. And if you start looking bad, then they're going to look at me. You aren't feeding these guys properly? And they said, well, let's give it a try. And let's see how we look after a certain interval of time. And so the administrator said, well, let's give it a go. We'll give it a try and we'll see how it works. But if you guys aren't looking good by the end of that interval, then we're going to go back to, you're going to eat what we put before you. Well, God was merciful to them. Let's go to Daniel chapter 1, verse 8. And this isn't the only example, as we'll see here. Daniel chapter 1, verse 8. And as you look at the book of Daniel, this is just one incident of people doing what's right, not going along with the crowd. Daniel 1, verse 8, it says, but Daniel proposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore, he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. And the end result was God blessed them. They did what was right, and God was with them, and God blessed them. And you can be assured that if you are in a situation where you know what the right thing to do is, and you do it, you will be blessed. You will be blessed. So, and we see that repeatedly in Daniel's life and in the life of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. God is involved in the matter, and he's looking at you and he's saying, this person is faithful to me. And if you are faithful to God, God says, I will be faithful to you. You can count on it. You can be assured of it. And Daniel's not the only example. Look at Noah. Noah is the only Christian in his time. I think his family members went along, but they're not cited as the standard. It's Noah. He's the only one. Why go along? Why stand out? You look at Abraham. Abraham lived in Canaan. He never became a part of it. He lived a part of it. Why go through that? Why not just fit in? Look at Moses. Man, you can be Pharaoh and you can have all the great things that come with it. And Moses said, no, I'm not going down that path. I'm going to be faithful to God. Let's go to Revelation chapter 13. And look at an example that is to unfold in all probability in the not too distant future. Revelation chapter 13. There's going to be, as you can see here, there's going to be intense pressure to follow a certain path. And there's going to be a big price that the people who refuse to follow this path are going to pay. Revelation 13, verse 15. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image, as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. You're going to conform, or you're going to suffer on, you're going to die. That's the choice. That's a pretty serious choice. It says, he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads. And you will not receive this mark unless you conform to what they're wanting you to do. Without that mark, there's going to be a price to be paid. Verse 17, and that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark of the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate that number. And it's taught, but see, you can see they're going to be coerced here. And that's coming our way. And so we find examples of those who did what was right when others were not, from Genesis to Revelation. So once we've learned what is right in God's sight and we put it into practice, we might think that doing the right thing is going to be easy. When you're doing the right thing, is it going to be easy? No, Christ said, in all likelihood, I was persecuted. You're probably going to be persecuted at some point along the way. That just comes with the territory. And there's no fun to it. There is no fun to it, as you see with the situation here with the beast and the false prophet and what's coming in that time. And that's been the way it is for God's people for 6,000 years and will be till this world comes to an end. But you look at the Apostle Peter. The Apostle Peter was Peter as strong as he imagined himself to be before Christ's death. Peter said, you know what? I'm with you to the end. I will never betray you. I'm with you to the end. And Christ said, I don't think you really know yourself as well as you think. In fact, you are going to betray me. And he did. He wouldn't stand with Christ. He had promised he'd stand with him right on to the end, and he didn't stand with him. And he had Christ look him in the eye. And what I can't imagine that moment when he realized what Christ said was true and he had failed miserably. But what did Christ do? Did Christ cast him off? He didn't. Christ didn't cast him off. Because of Christ's sacrifice, Peter was able to be forgiven. And he was given a new chance in life. He became a new creature. He became a person who could stand up for what's right and not cave in to any pressure. He wasn't perfect, but he had learned a great lesson through that experience of betraying Jesus Christ. And he never forgot it. Did he fall short? Yes, he did. But he was on the right path and he picked himself up each time and continued down that path. And ultimately, Peter died in Christ's service. He died in Christ's service. Now let's see what Peter has to tell us in 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 6 through 9. 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 6 through 9. So when you look at somebody who failed miserably, it was an epic failure, as I've heard it said, an epic fail. 1 Peter 1, verse 6. It says, in this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while, if need be, you have been grieved by various trials. Peter understood this because he went through it. He understood what he's talking about. He'd learned great lessons through his experience. And you know, we are grieved by various trials. We don't want the trials, but they come our way for whatever reason. And the reason they come is this, that the genuineness of your faith, is your faith genuine? We said, when we were baptized, we told Jesus Christ, I'll follow you wherever you lead. Whatever you want me to do, I'll do it. That's what we said. I don't care what it is. I will do it. And I'm going to put you before everything else in my life. That's what we said. And so God says, you know what? I want to know if your faith is genuine. So I'm going to allow trials to come your way. He says, being much more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, may be found to praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ. So he said, I'm going to try you as with fire, that I can know, is your faith genuine? That's what God needs to know about each and every one of us. So we face these trials. We face these choices. We face these pressures. And the question is, will we follow that path? Or we say, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do what's right. I'm going to do what's right, and I will not compromise with that. So as we are tested by fire, we want to meet the test. And he said, if you meet the test, then we will be found to be to praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ. That means you will rise in the first resurrection. You will be a spirit being. You will be welcomed into the family of God. You will be an eternal being. You will never die. That's what's offered to all of us. doing the right thing. He goes on to, you know, as we think about this, we might think about these questions. Will we stick with the truths of the Bible, or will we cave in to the pressure that is placed upon us? Will we justify not living up to the standard? Will we break the Sabbath for the job, to be on the team, to have fun? Will we involve ourselves in drinking or pot smoking or whatever it may be because we think it's fun and everybody else is doing it? Will we give in to the pressure to conform, or will we hold fast to what we know to be true? So our job is to prove what's true, hold fast to it, and live it every day. And practice it every day to where it becomes routine. Peter says that going through a test of this nature is like being tested with fire, but the outcome is wonderful. So doing what is right when everybody is not, as we do that, our Savior Jesus Christ will know that we love Him and that we put Him first, and we will not deny Him no matter what comes our way. So as you think about this in summary, determine in your life to do what is right, even when others are not. Determine to do what is right, even when others are not.